What have you done today to earn your place in this crowded world? Dwight and Swain are here to do a short review of the Amazon Prime series, Utopia, written and executive produced by Gillian Flynn of Gone Girl fame. Utopia is the story about a band of obsessed comic fans knee-deep in a conspiracy turned real that could lead to a literal Armageddon. On this episode, Dwight and Swain explain how they came to the show, break down a few characters like Jessica Hyde, Arby, and the nefarious biotech engineer, Kevin Christie, played by John Cusack, as well as the dangers of putting out a TV show about a pandemic in the middle of a pandemic. And by the way, the version of Utopia that we're reviewing today is actually the American adaptation. The original cult favorite was created by Dennis Kelly and aired on Channel 4 in the UK back in 2013. As always, thanks for listening to the show, and please don't forget to subscribe to the show at sidebarforever.com or wherever you get your podcast.
Good morning, Dr. Silberman. How's the knee?
Did you just have a brain fart?
I know Taekwondo.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Fuck with me, and we'll see who shits on the sidewalk.
Come quietly, or there will be trouble.
Clearly, I wasn't talking to you, big titties. You cherub-looking motherfucker.
While you were still learning how to spell your name, I was being trained to conquer galaxies.
The real question is, what are those?
Okay. Yep.
Hey, let me ask you something.
Sure.
What is your purpose?
Nice, man. Nice. Yeah, man. As the incredible John Cusack, man, he really showed himself to be something other than that 80s baby, baby faced person he was back in the day, man. I wasn't expecting that out of his character at all. I was expecting to be like this nice guy. I don't know why, but I guess watching story dynamics, like going too far into it, watching story dynamics evolve. It's like, okay, well, if you already have your protagonist in place, all he can be is the antagonist, you know? So that kind of knowing that how stories were set up and structured and stuff, that kind of helped like usher in who he was as a character. But I really wasn't expecting him to play that role, honestly.
Well, I honestly thought that some of his, he has given us that kind of energy in things like City Hall and True Colors. Did you ever see True Colors with James Spader?
I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, wait a minute. Was that the one where James Spader was the bad guy, though?
Well, they were both kind of bad, I think.
Okay, then.
It's been some years since I've seen the I've seen the film.
Okay.
Yeah, but for those listening, we are here to discuss the TV series Utopia. Dee and I both watched it. It's only Dwight and I on this episode. Adrian sat this one out because he didn't watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
But Dwight and I both managed to take in all 9 episodes. For anyone who doesn't know, Utopia is it's an American sci-fi thriller web series about a group of obsessed misfits who are trying to unravel this massive conspiracy involving a lost comic book, a wealthy biotech engineer, a pandemic that could lead to Armageddon.
Right.
And at the center of the web is this mysterious stranger called Jessica Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
The show debuted on Amazon Prime on September 25th of 2020. And it's an adaptation of a British show. Dwight and I were just talking about that before we started recording. It's an adaptation of a British show of the same name that came out in 2013. And it's considered a cult classic over in the UK. But Gillian Flynn of Gone Girl fame, she created and executive produced and wrote the Prime version that we're going to discuss on the show today. And originally, David Fincher, the director, was attached and was announced to be directing all of the episodes, but Fincher ran into some snags and ended up dropping out, and then Flynn took over as the showrunner.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so it sort of has this kind of like bent sensibility to it, though, man, in a lot of ways. So that's they still managed to maintain that who the director was, and you know,
yeah,
of the you know, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Now, the reason I started watching the show was, you know how, like, we're all in, you know, even though we're not in quarantine, hardcore quarantine like we were, you know, we're all keeping it close to the house. So I've got, like, a notepad on my iPhone of things to watch. And some of the stuff is, like, older movies that I hadn't seen in a while. I said, oh, I'm going to go back and revisit this.
Right.
Some is like, new movies and things that, you know, people will tell me about. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to try to find this and get a chance to watch it since I have more time on my hands.
Right.
To, you know, consume media. And then some of it is like television shows. And you know, and you and I, I'm sure you get this too, you know, where Netflix will suggest things. You know, the streaming platform you're watching will suggest things, I guess, you know, Amazon. And then, you know, you start seeing articles in your news feed saying, hey, the 10 best sci-fi this, or the 5 best this on this platform. And you're like, okay. And it's a Utopia. What is that?
Right.
I watched the first 3 episodes of the British version, and then when I found out that the American version was going to drop in about a week, I held off and didn't finish it. And I said, well, I'll just watch the American version when it comes out and just watch it all with fresh eyes and see what it's all about. And I remember I was mentioning it to you and Adrian.
Right.
And I was talking to you guys about the we were texting about the torture scene. And you were like, oh, man, I'm good. Never mind.
Yeah. You know what, man? True confession.
What?
I knew that was coming. I still didn't watch that scene.
You didn't?
I skipped it, dude. I was like, I don't want to see making their eyeballs dug out with a freaking spoon, you know? I'm good, you know?
that's definitely what happened, too, yo. And it was,
you know?
I think the British version was more gruesome.
Wow.
It was directed with a little more flair and it was, just a little more hardcore for whatever reason. But why did you end up watching it? You know, after we had our initial exchange about it, what made you take a peek?
Honestly, man, it was, like you said, it was, you know, missing the comic book scene, man. And to some degree, like go missing conventions and being around people and things like that. And this seemed like, a really good take on what it was like for geeks to be hyped about going to a comic book adventure type situation. So when I started watching it, it was the very first, I guess, half an hour of the, maybe 15, 20 minutes or half an hour of the first episode was very authentic to what it's like to be in a comic book convention or have people hyped up going to a comic convention, you know, and everybody was texting each other, this group that was in the Utopia, the comic, they were texting each other back and forth about, are you going to make it? Are you going to make it? You know, I'm there, you know, and it was like, okay, this is kind of cool. I can see where this is going, you know, and the idea of the kids or who it was that found, stumbled upon the comic in their father's house.
Yeah.
And selling it, you know, that's something that's always, it's like a dream for any comic collector too. You know, like, you know,
yeah.
You know, I found these awesome, you know, Jim Starlin pages in my father's attic, and
yeah,
you know, that kind of thing, you know,
right.
So that kind of had me hooked based on that. I was like, okay, this is cool. Let's see where this goes. And then you start seeing have a more, I guess, modern sensibility where our current pandemic sensibilities are now being challenged.
Yeah.
Or actually, we're being living in that situation. That made me feel more and more that pushed me on further and deeper into the series.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that's why I watched it to fully, because I was like, wow, where's this going? What kind of parallels are they drawing here? And I was never really a big fan of the X-Files, but I always liked the constant idea of something else out there. There's something else underneath things which you don't see just really to surface. It's really the true meaning behind it. You know, the conspiracy theory is a thing I always kind of liked, greater or less, at some point.
I got you. Yeah, and I think that this series is rife with that. And you mentioned the our current situation, and there's a pandemic element that runs through the series. But the series was actually in production years. This series has actually been held up, from what I understand. But it's been in production for a while. So all of this predates, our current, situation with COVID-19, et cetera. It just happens to kind of be hitting at the time and kind of, using some of the language and the nomenclature that we use today to describe our situation. But to get into a little more detail about what it is, the story is basically this. There was a comic called Dystopia that came out many years ago. And it's this phantasmagorically wild comic book a la like Fables or Sandman, something like that. And it's about a young heroine and her father's a scientist and there's a villain, Mr. Rabbit, and a conspiracy, and this place called Home, with a capital H. And,
right.
Her protector, Artemis. And it, within the comic book, there are it's seen by fans, the fans see predictions of deadly diseases that have actually happened in the real world, like Ebola and SARS.
Right.
So they're all super obsessed and, consider this thing to be, speaking to the future. And so, like Dee is describing, there are, message boards online and they mm-hmm. communicate and, mm-hmm. and do what we do as fans of things, as super fans of things.
Right.
And then so Utopia is the sequel to that particular comic that prior to now, none of the characters on the show ever knew existed.
Right.
And then, like they said, there's an actor on the show who finds a copy of this. And is it his father, his grandfather's house?
I think it's the girl's, the young lady's father.
His fiance? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So they find this comic that no one knew had ever existed. And they start mm-hmm. They decide they're going to sell it. So they go to like a big Comic-Con style convention and set up meetings and decide that they're going to sell it. And that's kind of how the story kind of turns, because these bad guys show up and then, our misfits end up coming together and kind of convening. And then they kind of, that's when the whole thing, the bottom falls out of the whole thing. So, and the comic that's displayed on the show was drawn by who, Dee?
Joao Ruas.
Yes, Joao Ruas, a former Sidebar guest.
Yes, awesome, incredible.
Yeah, he's an incredible artist, and we all discovered him as the successor to James Jean in terms of doing the covers for Fables.
Exactly, exactly.
When Jean left comics and went and became a fine artist, Joao Ruas took over. Mm-hmm. And Dee and I are both big fans of his personal work, and mm-hmm. and Dee, you said you're a big fan of the comic art that he used the production art that he made for the series, right?
Yes, man, I love to see that in a big large format, and the size of the DC format comic that came out a couple of years ago. Was that size? It was huge. It was really. But anyway, that size would be the ultimate like compendium, I think, for that whole story.
Make it like really, a big book, because the comic that they have on the show is kind of oversized anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was one of those old fashioned 1970s Marvel spectacular.
Yeah, yo, yes, yes. Bring back the old school.
That's it. But full detail renderings and stuff.
But you're talking about what we've been talking about as far as the pandemic and the disease and all of that. There is a disease on the show that is laying waste, and everybody is concerned, and there's government conspiracies and all that. And Amazon, to the earlier point, Amazon included a disclaimer at the beginning of all the episodes that reads, "Not based on an actual pandemic or related events." Mm-hmm, I guess in an effort to kind of protect themselves and to not have people, read too much into the series and what the series is about, but
right. So people wouldn't see them as glory hounds too. They think they were just trying to capitalize on the current events.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that IGN said is it's the right series for the wrong time is one of the things I read.
Oh yeah, that's perfect. Yeah.
Be that as it may, it shows people at the you know, at their worst when they're faced with a potential pandemic, and we can learn from that versus being afraid of it. Or, you know, so.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Cast on the show, the most well-known cast members are going to be, of course, as Dee mentioned, John Cusack as the biotech engineer Kevin Christie. He's kind of like a Steve Jobs character. And, of course, Cusack, you know, everybody knows him, you know, from the 80s, from, like, Say Anything and Better Off Dead and later on Gross Point Blank and Con Air and America's Sweethearts. And the rest of the cast.
$3.
I want my $2. Oh, man.
That was awesome. Good.
One of the other known actors on the show is Rainn Wilson. Who plays Michael Stearns, and he was on The Office, of course, and he's done many other things.
And was my namesake, shamefully so, on The Office, but...
Was he Dwight?
Dwight Schrute, yeah, that was him.
Okay, The rest of the characters are lesser known, but they've done some stuff. There's a character, a guy named Dan Byrd. He plays Ian. He was on in the movie Easy A, and he was in the remake of The Hills Have Eyes. And Jessica Roth, who plays Samantha, is the girl who is the star of the Happy Death Day movies.
Oh, okay.
So actually, I took my daughter, Skylar, and her friends to see Happy Death Day in the theaters when it first came out. And the guy who plays Kevin Christie's son was the Riddler on Gotham.
Yes, he was, yo.
Yeah. Yeah. He was the... What a jerk. The Riddler on Gotham. And then Sasha Lane, who plays Jessica Hyde, the mysterious... Who is Jessica Hyde? Where is Jessica Hyde?
Stay alive, Jessica Hyde.
Stay alive, Jessica Hyde. There you go. There you go. Stay alive. She was in the Hellboy, the last version of Hellboy with the fellow from Stranger Things. I forget the actor's name. It doesn't matter. It's fine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she was also in a movie called American Honey. But what did you think of the cast, man? What did you think of the performances? You already mentioned Cusack, you know, definitely impressing you with his, you know, not exactly an evil turn, but definitely like as a diabolical kind of a person. You know what I mean?
I mean, I liken what he did ultimately to that of what Thanos was talking about, dude, in the Avengers movies.
Yeah,
you know, he was talking about culling the herd, man. You know, you know, it's one of those things which, you know, undeniably, a lot of scientists have said the same thing along what he's talking about now, except for they're not going to those extremes. But he just, you know, he's one of those guys that just, you know, took it upon himself to be that person who would do that, you know, him and his family.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe his whole cultish type family, dude. Like, you know,
yeah.
What have you done to have meaning in the world today? I mean, what is, you know, and what? Everybody had to have that. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I had forgotten about that part. So the first time he said that, he was at the dinner table. This is before we find out, you know, what his master plan is. He's at the dinner table with his son and with his adopted children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're all holding hands and they don't actually bless the food. This is just something he does. He says, "What have you done to earn your place on this in this crowded world?"
Right.
And then everybody says something positive that they did for the day. And when I first heard it, I loved it.
Yeah, it was great.
I was like, oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I said, that's a very good way in a non-religious way for people to stop and to take a little bit of self-reflection and then to look outward. You know, before they enjoy their meal or whatever. I thought it was great. And then as he kept doing it, I was like, oh, shit.
Right, right.
John Cusack is a motherfucker.
Right? Especially when Arby comes to the house and he's like, you say, he's like, Arby, what have you done turning your place in the world today?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a crazy hole that you find out the house is like, the home is actually like a place where they keep all their I guess abandoned children or children which they've sacrificed to the cause of this limited population of the world and you know not going too far into it you know some of the things that happen, the sacrifices that are made are really really weird. And from the beginning, like when you go to the comic convention and everybody's like you know, meeting for different reasons to discuss Utopia and various other things are going to the convention too. But
yeah,
you know, they're all there, and you think, okay, they're just going there to you know, have this exchange about the comics. And it's like, well, some are and some aren't. Like, some are more into, like you said, the ulterior meeting of what, or the more fringed speculative meeting of what was going on. And those are just there to discuss the art and the characters.
Yeah.
And the our characters, the leads of the show, were more interested in the diabolical side of the issues of the issue, wherein the other ones were like, oh no, this is a good character, the main driver of the character was this, that, and the other. What are you talking about? And of course, the art loving kind, like probably what I would be when I was there.
Yeah.
You know, they're more they were dismissive of the fringe group. You know, like, oh, you guys are just here to, you know, discuss this, that, and the third. And you know, the other ones were, as they met each other, were just kind of cool. It was, you know, the characters met each other different segments. They didn't all arrive at the same time, as you would at a real convention. You know, everybody gets there differently, different times. So, and it was, I loved it, man. I loved it. That whole thing, the whole dynamic was interesting, really cool to me.
Yeah.
And then the secret agent comes up there, and he's like, everybody takes turns. They show everybody taking turns to bid on the comic, and what does it mean to you? And they show them different pages of it to kind of, you know, to wet their palates and make them really interested. And then they wouldn't see the entire comic, you know. And then a secret agent comes up there. I guess it's a secret agent or wherever the hell he was. He comes up and he's like, gives him like, what, $50,000 or some crazy.
It's like $20,000 or something. It was a lot of money. Yeah.
It was a lot of money, man. He's like, it was like, okay, game over. This is what we wanted. This is our nest egg for getting married. You know, I don't care who else sees it. I mean, at this point, you know, whoever else comes after that, it's just too late. You know, and they gave him the book for the money.
Yeah.
And so what do you think of that? You thought it was like, okay, this is going to be, what do you think, after you saw that particular scene, what do you think I was going to precipitate from there? Do you think people are going to die or get crazy, or what do you think?
I didn't know anything, you know, and it's handled a little differently in the British version.
Okay.
But, you know, when, and what Dee is describing is again, they just held like, almost like just meetings in their hotel room at the convention. You know, and people who were, you know, super crazy fans of Dystopia could come in and take a look at it and then bid on buying this, you know, this very unique, one-of-a-kind thing. Mm-hmm. And they knew they would get a lot of money for it, but they didn't know it was going to be like $20,000 or $30,000 or $50,000 or whatever it was.
Right, right, right.
But Christopher Denham plays Arby. He plays this kind of portly assassin, is about the easiest way for me to describe it. Very quiet and you know, kind of a stunted performance, but the actor is very good. Mm-hmm. What did you think about this whole idea of the bad guys coming in the room, a room full of people? Because I thought this was horseshit. A room full of people who are like half their age,
right?
And you're gonna tell them, you're gonna threaten them, and then you're gonna tell them, hey, I'm just gonna take out a needle and inject you with some shit, and you're gonna be okay.
Right, right, right.
And they let them do that to them. I thought that was crazy.
It was crazy, man. But I it's weird, man. I mean, it's one of those things wherein it's, you either trust the eventual or catch the immediate, you know.
But aren't you catching the immediate, man? Dude, it's going to be a bloody fucking mess in there. When they find my body, they're going to say, no, this dude fought somebody and took a chunk out of their ass before he before he took a dirt nap.
Exactly, exactly.
There's no way I'm letting you inject me with something. I'm going to inject you with my foot up your ass.
Yeah, it was crazy, man. It was very like, I don't think I don't know how I'll respond to that situation, because first off, you're at a convention and you don't think anything like that's gonna jump off like that anyway. So for these weirdos to come in there, you know, and with needles and guns and shit and threaten you for some pages, it's like that would put you in a situation where I may be disarmed, but I still, my natural defense is to fight versus to get injected. I'm like, you're not sticking with anything, man. I don't know what you have. That could be, you know, AIDS in that needle. It could be anything. Anything could be that needle, dude. You know what I mean?
It could be anything, man.
Right.
And I mean, and the people in the hotel room, the kids who they ultimately injected with whatever and killed them and made it look like they had a heroin party.
OD, exactly, yeah.
I was just like, okay, y'all didn't fight, y'all didn't flight, y'all didn't do anything. Y'all just gave up.
Right.
So I thought that was a little, that was more than a little, you know, unrealistic and
right,
like kind of sensationalized, like what? And then the part after that, which kind of bothered me, you know, as it relates to, because the other convention stuff, the scene at the bar where Ashley, who plays Becky, you know, she kind of has the hots for Ian, and they share a kiss in this crowded convention floor, and there's lights behind them, and there are people running, and, you know, they kind of find like a quiet, shadowed area, and they share this kiss, and mm-hmm. And so you assume that a convention style hookup is going to happen at some point,
right? Right.
But even after that, when they inject the kids in the hotel room, and they leave, and they go to, they take the list of everybody who's seen Utopia, and they go to their hotel rooms and shoot them, and kill them, in the doorway.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
In the hallway of a hotel with a crowded convention. Right. Which I thought was, again, totally unrealistic. Convention hallways are littered with people. There are people up all hours of the night. There's no way you could do that at a real comic book convention.
Right.
You know, not any of the ones that you and I have attended.
Right, right.
But
I think at some point, I mean, people, it does die down, but the likelihood of you getting caught is very high. You know what I mean? I mean, depending on what floor you're on, of course, but there's always somebody out there.
Yeah,
at the convention we've been to, where they're not necessarily inside of eye shot, but you can hear them, and you would hear, you know, people dropping to the floor. You would hear, you know, screams. You would hear, you know, gunshots, especially, you know, because guns are definitely not some.
Even though they had silencers, it was like, okay, mm-hmm.
Right.
And the only other thing that I kind of didn't like, and I thought was a little bit offensive, and frankly, like, kind of shitty, was. Okay, let's find out which one of these people has a background with mental illness, and we'll blame that person.
Right, right, right.
You know, I was like, okay, come on, man.
Yeah.
So, but you said you didn't watch the torture scene with our boy Wilson?
No, I didn't, man.
Okay.
I didn't. I watched the beginning of it, you know, where they start with assault. And the it was a, how'd it go? It was like a 3-step process.
It was like hot sauce, and then it was like I don't know, yo, bug spray. It was everything, yo.
Yeah, when you get to the eye part, I was like, okay, I'm done. That's good for me. I don't need to see the eye thing. But I would have watched it had you not told it. I think told me about it, but I think because I was already preemptively, you know, innervated by it. I skipped it.
Gotcha.
Like a punk.
what are some of the other scenes or the other set pieces that you really dug, man?
Oh man, I mean, I was. It was. Here's the thing. I didn't know how far they're going to go with this thing being like predictive of the virus and kind of like a. Alice in the Wonderland comes to life type situation with Jessica Hyde. So to see her show was a big surprise to me. It was weird. It was like, whoa, wait a minute. So it's like, you know, they step through the looking glass into reality, and now it's like almost like the Matrix to some regard. You know, like
right?
How much this is real? How much this is fake? You know, I mean, you know, how can any person predict the future to the point that this person did inside this book? You know, and it became a I was actually not only surprised by that, I was actually enchanted by that whole prospect. It's like, okay, yeah, this is cool. You know, because you look at, like, Joel's work, and you look at, like, who did Fables before him? Was it Tommy?
The interiors or the covers?
The covers.
James Jean.
James Jean. You look at James Jean's work, it definitely lends itself to that kind of, you know, flight of fancy and otherworldly, twisted, you know, you know, Dickensian kind of work, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, so I looked at it and I was like, okay, this is cool, man. I'm really, and to see some of the things that happened, like I was very appalled when Jessica took out Samantha, dude. I was like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah. That,
you know,
that took everybody by surprise.
You know, because she was one of the smartest ones in the room, and that was Jessica's problem. Like, she's one of the smartest ones in the room. She's like, there's only one, according to her. Maybe she didn't say this, but it sounded like this to me. Like, there could be only one boss bitch, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know. So she I guess eliminated the competition, I guess, for people's affection or whatever direction, where the case may be. But yeah, I didn't leave her body there for so long, dude. It was like, what, 3 episodes? Her body's like,
yeah, fucking yo. It's like, isn't she stinking about now? I mean,
you know,
how are you guys dealing with this?
Yeah. So yeah, man. That whole on the run thing for me, it was like, I mean, come on. I mean, who's really looking for these people, and why are they looking for these people, and why is Jessica so important, and why is this book so important to recover, you know?
Right.
It was just weird.
What did you think about when the two redheaded twins showed up in the parking lot?
Dude, that was weird because it looked just like Callum Worthy, which is the guy to play Ethan, which was the spouse or potential spouse of the girl who had the comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, it freaked me out, dude, because, like, wait a minute. They kind of like Mopsy and Popsy, or like Mopsy and Popsy, but like the Tweedledee and Tweedledum, dude, all, you know, falling out of the woods, coming at him and whatnot. I was like, wow, these people are, like, really strange and off kilter for assassins. What the hell are they, what are they doing, you know?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, though.
I did, too, man. I think the scene at the end, toward the end, I guess it was the final episode where they actually attacked the factory.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I was like, okay, you know, they come in and they speed and then the car blows up. And then I'm like, then they're trying to break their way into the factory. Mm-hmm. And so didn't they cut off dude's hand?
They cut off his finger.
His finger, yeah. They cut Cusack's off John Cusack's finger and then use it as the identifier to get in the factory.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, where are your explosives? Don't you have more explosives? Why'd you waste your explosives blowing up the car? You should blow up the factory, you know, to destroy the inoculation that he's trying to give to essentially give to the world. But
right.
But yeah, I liked all of that. I did like the road trip aspect of it.
Yeah,
I'm always good for a road trip, especially when you've got a wacky bunch of characters. I wasn't cool with our boy Wilson going like episodes and episodes with a big ass hole in his face, this bloody crater where his eyeball used to be.
Yeah, it was disgusting, yo. A weeping wound, yo. It was horrible, dude.
Quite literally.
It finally dried. It was nasty, yo. I mean, he you know, and they lied to him, dude. I guess they lied to protect him, but at the same time, it's like, I mean, I don't know, how are you going to tell somebody their family just being killed? I mean, that's kind of hard, you know, I mean, that just, but I mean, at the same time, it's like, you know, I mean, Jessica's so quick to tell the truth about so many different things. I think she's more interested in eliciting their help than she was in getting the truth, at least giving the truth to others. So
yeah,
she's very one-sided. I liked a lot of what she was and who she was as a character, but I despise some of the things that she was as a character at the same time.
Well, she's very self-serving. Like you just described, she's using this gang of fans
mm-hmm.
for her own means because she's just trying to get to her dad.
Mm-hmm.
That's just all she's trying to get to the point where, you know, you keep hearing about this protector and mentor and teacher she had named Artemis.
Mm-hmm.
And then we finally meet Artemis, and Artemis is like an old bag lady living under the bridge, yo, like out of a you know, a Red Hot Chili Peppers song or something, yo.
It's true.
And then she ends up offing her.
Yeah, yo, because she getting wrong because she's giving her the truth, man.
Yeah,
it's played by Cameron Manheim, yo.
Is that the actor? The actor's name?
Law and Order.
Oh, okay.
I think it was. Yeah, man. She. I always liked her as a character. Was she in Law and Order? She was in some TV show back in the 90s. I forgot what she was in, but she was awesome, man.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But she killed her own mentor, you know, in the comic, she's the one that's, I guess, carrying the rifle and kind of big boned it. And,
yeah,
like trying to protect her and show the ways of how to, you know, protect herself, I guess. But
yeah. What did you think about the one, the character, the actor Javon Walton, who played Grant, the kid.
Mm.
What did you think about the kid's performance? A. B. What did you think about him hooking up with that little girl that he became friends with?
Alice.
The fact that she had a black mother, I assume she was a, you know, say her adopted mother, and it wasn't some kind of, you know, odd biological thing going on where she had a, you know, a white child.
Right.
And then the violent death that was delivered to her mother in front of her, yo.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, at the hands of, was it Arby who shot her? Or was it?
It was Arby. It was Arby. Yeah. Crazy. It's Arby. Arby, which later becomes John.
That was
crazy, dude. First off, you know, I can appreciate, you know, motherly, aspect of what she's trying to do, you know, just this. I'm kind of like I feel for street, you know, street kids, possibly because my background and what I've seen in my lifetime, and you know, if you come in here and you're respectful and don't break anything, you know, you need a place to stay and place to eat and survive, whatever. You know, obviously she did that for Alice already too, because I mean that's not her daughter in reality. I mean,
right.
I liked the fact she gave him a place to stay. It was rather unrealistic, but then, you know, given the bent of this entire storyline, you know, I was able to get into it, man. As to the crazy murderous death, I mean, it's always hard to see a person that does nothing but good inside of a story, and then she kind of become attached to as a motherly matronly figure, yeah. Like go down, you know.
Yeah.
And so when Alice, you know, of course, you know, retaliates and goes off and kills old boy or shoots old boy, shoots his wife, shoots Rain's wife. She had it coming.
Yeah.
You know,
Janine.
She totally had it coming. Yeah, Janine. She totally had it coming, dude. That was weird too. Like that. Like this entire organization has been watching. And planning who they're going to hook up with for the entire time as they're ready for trying to, this is weird, dude. It's like
very nefarious, yo. Very nefarious.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, he's like, so you didn't love me at all. It's like, I was put here to watch you, you know, this is what I do. This is what they say. This is my meaning. This is what I did for
my purpose.
This is what my purpose, you know, it's like, wow. Straight cult shit, dude.
Yeah. I mean,
so yeah. I felt it was designed to make me feel bad about the situation, and they delivered on it.
Yeah.
You know,
what was the young lady who ended up, her twin sister ended up sacrificing herself as a martyr?
Lily, you know,
Lily. And what was the sister's name? Yeah. Charlotte or something? Or
I think it was Charlotte. Yeah. I think it was Charlotte.
Yeah. And so she's like, okay, what is my purpose? My purpose is martyr, right. You know? And so she basically had been bred as a child to, you know, your goal, your purpose in this life, and you're on this crowded planet, you know, is to martyr yourself.
Yeah, and to do whatever the rabbit tells you to do. Yes, you know, under that directive, whatever. That's just crazy, man. I mean, could you imagine?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you're a twin, and even Chris even said he likes twins because there's more use to them. You know, like they use trick a Rain's character. You know, it's like, okay. That was a cold scene, man. Where it's like you believed it. I mean, even the person that was playing her father, you know, his untimely demise. He walked in front of a freaking 18-wheeler in the middle of a highway, dude. It was crazy, dude.
It really was. It really was.
It was good though.
And that's funny too, because again we have this lethal but silent, slightly overweight assassin. But later on, when he comes back to the house and kills the assassins that have come to kill Wilson and to kill, they come in to save Kevin Christie.
Right.
Yeah, and then Arby takes them out.
Yeah, exactly. In the process, they're coming to get rid of, to capture Jessica Hyde and kill the rest of the crew that's there.
Yeah, yeah. And you see Arby do his thing and take them out, and you're like, okay, well, he kind of redeemed himself a little bit, you know.
Yeah, yeah, he was getting it, man. He was getting it. And the whole thing about that was he saw his page in the book that says that he was, quote-unquote, the brother of Jessica, which is weird.
Yeah.
So it's like, wow, man, they really lace this together really well. It's
like, yeah.
It's like straight out of a Dave McKean, you know, Alan Moore type of book, man.
Truly. And a surprise twist, and this won't mean as much to you as it will to Adrian if he listens to it, but Sonia Sohn, who played Kima Greggs on The Wire, shows up as this government agent, and then we find out that she's Mr. Rabbit?
No, she's not Mr. Rabbit. No. She's her mother. She's I think she's actually the biological mother of
Jessica Hyde?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's my vibe. That's what I'm getting from her.
Okay. You know,
I could be wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she's taking a lot of care of her character. She's taking a lot of care of her in the house that Jessica's always talked about living in.
A little
small house behind the rest of the ranch or whatever.
Yeah, the yellow house where they would bring her gifts, but she couldn't play with anybody.
Right, and she spent time underneath the cupboard and whatnot, dude, hiding from wherever she was hiding from. That's some really, really, almost like a 1980s, 1970s, the house of Haunted Hill or the Children in the Attic type situation, dude. You know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of tropes and a lot of things which they address here, but they do so with a great deal of interest and style and panache, as Adrian would say, man.
Yeah.
I love it.
I think your Alice in Wonderland analogy is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as they go further down the rabbit hole, they meet weirder and weirder characters, and and they're not sure what's a dream and what's not, what's a hallucination, what's not. So that final scene where we see this some figure slumped over a drawing board in the basement, presumably drawing, you know, pages of the same story. Is that, I guess, supposed to be Jessica's father?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting.
And that he's still alive?
Right. Yeah, which is weird in and of itself. Yeah. It's like, I mean, and I think maybe she's her, the whole thing that Jessica High has been going through is they seem like they've been doing like a, it's good to call that, a test where they test viral, different things for allergies on your skin, on her back and things like that. So she's been like a walking incubator for these various tests the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah, and even Kevin Christie, John Cusack's character, when they have him tied up and he finally kind of confesses and starts chewing a little bit of scenery, and he says, your father didn't love you. You know, he experimented on you. He kept you, you know, hidden away and locked away and, you know, only interacted with you, you know, for the sake of, you know, these experiments, you know, and that, you know, and that kind of speaks in a way to the idea that, you know, we all kind of remember our childhood either a little worse than it was or a little better than it was, but certainly not accurate to how it was, to some extent, you know, and her, Jessica Hyde, not being any different as far as that's concerned. So, before we wrap it up, man, do you think that you'll now go back and watch the British version, or are you kind of satiated with the American version and you just want to see what happens in the next season? Because they're going to do another one, of course.
Yeah, I want to run the American version through to completion first, just so I get thrown off by the various takes on the same kind of environment and storytelling.
Gotcha.
You know? And then maybe later on I go back and look at the British version, you know. Because I've done that before in the past, wherein I watched the American version of this TV show. I forget what it was called, but it was basically a vampire, a ghost, and a werewolf. And it
sounds like a joke, yo.
I know, right? You see, walk into this condo,
and
I forgot what it was, but it was good. And then I found it later on. It was a British version. I watched the British version, which was better afterwards.
Gotcha.
But yeah. So I'll probably, in that same order, if I have time, I'll probably do the same thing. But what about you? Do you think you'll continue on with the story the way it's been going, or?
I don't know. I might go back and watch the British version. I don't know if it, because I was going to ask you to rate it in terms of, like, you know, 5 stars, 4 stars, you know, 3 stars, okay, whatever, 2 stars, 1. You know, how would you rate it in terms of recommending it to someone else? And I would definitely give it 3 out of 5 stars. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was enjoyable and it kept my attention and I wanted to see what was going to happen next. But there were definitely some elements to it where that just kind of lost me in terms of believability, you know, some of the things that we mentioned. And then also, too, like, but anyway, I probably will go back and check out the British version and watch that to completion, because I think I only have maybe 6 more episodes.
Okay.
To watch. And it's, and it is, you know, the like they've, you know, they're gender flips and some different races and things going on. Some of it's the same, but
okay.
Some of it has flipped and changed. And the storytelling is a little different. The storytelling, like the two guys that initially come and start, you know, where's Jessica Hyde? Where's Jessica Hyde? And then they kill the kids or whatever.
Right.
They're a little creepier.
Oh.
In the British version. Like,
okay.
You know, they're a little creepier in the British version. And anyway, you know, just for the sake of comparing notes, I guess I'm that kind of guy. So,
okay, yeah, I mean, you're as much as completist in a lot of ways as I am in that regard. So, you know, I mean, you start something, you kind of want to see it through to the end and see where it ends up, because you could be surprised and could be pleasantly surprised by it. So,
right,
yeah, I feel you on that. As far as rating,
recommend it. Yeah, how would you rate it?
I would give it. Out of 5, I would give it a 4, man. I mean, I was thoroughly like involved in the whole story, man. Cool. You know, I binged on it for like 2 nights in a row, you know. So I was never let down by any of it. I was totally involved in the world. Now I didn't know how it was going to end. So that's one of the things I always like. I like to be surprised. To be you know, like I knew that Christy was a bastard, you know, and he was weird. But I didn't know if he would survive to the next season or if he would be dealt with, you know, with his son like superseding and becoming the Christy as head of the organization or not.
Right. You know? Did you see him being able to quote turn Wilson the way he did?
No. No, I didn't.
That threw me, dog. I was like, whoa.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, you look at Wilson's very much a pragmatist in a lot of ways. And he's also very, like, definitely a conspiracy theorist to his heart.
Of course, yeah.
But I mean, you can see, you know, Wilson, like, you know, the way he lived his life in a shelter to some degree, and on his parents, on his family's property. you can see how, yeah, he may be a person that which would can basically go either way based on being that far left, so to speak, or far right.
Right.
You see, he's definitely like manipulable in that regard, but I didn't expect it. No, I didn't at all.
I didn't either.
I'm still not sure if he's actually fully on, dude. I mean, I don't know if he's fully committed or not.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. You're not quite sure. And it's funny what you're talking about is his name. And I can't remember if they made this joke in the American version, but in the British version, they were like, okay, your name's Wilson? He's like, yeah. And he's like, and you use your real name on these message boards and online? He's like, yeah, who would believe that's a real name?
No, it's true, man. It's true. It's like one of the funny things about it. They talked about it. It was really a revelatory situation for people to deal with social media too, if you think about it, because no one ever actually saw it. That they had no idea what any of the people that were involved in the initial adventure knew what they each other looked like.
Right.
So it was like they thought the kid was actually this, you know,
an adult, a swinging single bachelor, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to see that he was like the super smart little kid, dude. To think about it, breaking in a hotel room, barely escaping with the comics in tow. That was a perilous scene. Dude. They really did a great job with that, you know. Because at any point in time, he could have been dealt with, you know, being the size that he was and that situation. But
with they're all congregating online and they haven't met each other in person, so they don't really know what each other looks like. And then when they finally do meet and they realize that Grant is a kid, and then Ian says, "Well, he does use a lot of exclamation points."
That concludes this episode of Sidebar Forever, hosted by Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson. You can find us online at sidebarforever.com. Any emails or questions can be directed to us at sidebarforever@gmail.com. And also, subscribe to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Sidebar Forever is copyright 2020. Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson.